Hi there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. Relationships. If there were one thing that people seem the most confused about, it's about love itself, and relationships is always a big question. Today I'm going to talk about a big key to a successful, loving relationship. It's about finding the balance between the me and the we of a relationship. Each of us are alone in one sense. We're on our own. We're separate from each other. We're made up of different bodies, different minds, different emotions. This individuality, this distinction, is the me in each one of us. Somewhere, what makes you unique from the person next to you? Well, mind, body, spirit. On the other hand, each of us yearns to form a one-to-one relationship with someone else, to create a we combining two me's. Right? Well, not each of us, because there are many people who don't want to have relationships, but most people yearn to create a we out of a me. And that we could be children, it could be family, it could be any number of things, but there seems this we is a very big factor. There's a lot of beauty in the we, and that's why most people hunger for it. With we, you can always, if there's a we of you, an us of us, we can always lean on each other. We can go to parties together. We can make house together. We can go shopping together. We can listen to each other. We will never feel all alone. We can nurse each other in sickness. We can celebrate holidays together. We can be each other's sex partner or best friends. We can always be on each other's side. It's us against the world, and at least I'm not alone against the world. And we won't let anybody hurt each other. I won't let anybody hurt you. You don't let anybody hurt me. And hopefully we will not betray each other in a significant way. And certainly we will not take sides against each other. We will share responsibility. Well, that's the we of the we. But, you know, it gets real questionable because as you get along in relationships, sometimes you do wind up taking sides. So let's not just run my list. Think about your own. What's the best part of a relationship? Can you think of things that are good parts of a relationship? Think in terms of the we. What's the beauty of the we? Is there a we in your life? And your we, as far as I'm concerned, could be you and Yo-Yo. It could be you and your cat, or you and your dog, or you and your mother, or you and... Where's your we? Think about the we that you have in your life. Now, what's the advantage here? What is this kind of coupling of two people about? Why go through all this trouble? Why not just live separate lives? Get together for the good stuff, you know? I think about Woody Allen when he was married and he used to live across Central Park from his wife, who lived on the other side of the park, and they were married. Of course, the marriage is a disaster. But they had this two individual marriages, and they two totally different apartments directly across penthouses across Central Park. Of course, then other stuff happened. But why not just live separate lives? Get together for the really good stuff. Wait till Friday night and say, all right, come on over, we'll sleep together, or you don't sleep together, but you're basically two different locations. Why do you want a we? In order for a relationship to survive, a certain part of the me, which is separate from the part that's the we in the relationship, must survive. So there's a me, which is you and your individuality, that must survive the we of a relationship. Whether or not you're in a relationship, what is the me part of you that needs to survive or you need to have in a relationship? Is there a me part of you? think about yourself and think about, this is Armand DeMille with you by the with the positive mind, by the way. What part of you is separate that cannot be compromised no matter how much in love you are, no matter how much embroiled you are, no matter how many kids you have? Is there a part of you that is separate that cannot be compromised, that if it gets compromised, you're like dead? It's the me in the we. You see, if there's a me inside you and it gets compromised, then you get smushed. Then you no longer exist. Nothing destroys a relationship more than people not respecting each other's individual me's. People clinging to each other with desperation. People not allowing the other person to breathe. People saying things like I heard the other day. I told her I was going to take a trip to Washington, D.C., and she said, oh, no, I don't want you to go and leave me here. What kind of things do you do on your own that you know your mate might prefer that you don't do? That you know deep inside you that this thing you do is probably doing more for the relationship than your mate could ever realize because it satisfies something in you that you cannot have satisfied in your relationship. Think about things like that. I mean, maybe you go to the bar and have a beer with your friends. Maybe you hang out. Maybe you go to a movie by yourself. Maybe you take a long walk around the block. Maybe you dress your independent way. Maybe your husband or mate is so jealous of you and wants you to just dress in a demure way, but you are maintaining the me of you. And what he or she doesn't know is that by your maintaining the me, you are keeping the relationship alive. We're going to take your calls about this issue because I'm sure you have a lot to say about it. What things do you do that are independent of your mate that are essential to your feeling of well-being? There's a question. What are the things that you do? And it could be anything. It could be watching television of your own kind when nobody's looking. It could be on the computer. It could be taking a walk. It could be calling friends. It could be Secret Santa. It could be whatever it is. You see, if you can't get the feeling of being a me within the we, then you begin to get desperate. And I want to talk about that desperation. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. The biggest sign you have of a desperate me-ness, is the man who parks himself in front of a football game on television for a whole afternoon or a news station or a person's relationship with their computer, an online computer, in the room but traveling, you know, the entire world. But the person who is parked in front of this thing, isolating themselves, cutting out this niche, is a sign of that desperate search for a me. To him, this is the only way he can preserve the me. A lot of internet pornography addiction is and can be interpreted as an attempt to preserve a me. You know people disagree with it. You know it's not right, but you're doing it. It's you with you. It's like overeating. You know, the thing about overeating, you do it. And you have control over it, and you have the power. And one of the things about overeating, and by overeating I mean a box of Entenmann donuts or something like that, the thing about it is it puts the power in your hands. Even though it makes you feel bad, it's you doing you, not somebody telling you you shouldn't be eating that, you know? So a lot of the addictions, a lot of the pornography, a lot of addictions, a lot of things that people do, are very often attempts at maintaining some kind of autonomy. And it's not the issue. It's not the thing itself. It's not about food being nurturance or pornography being sex. It's just about I'm trying to keep myself going here. So there are a lot of strategies that people, another strategy that many people employ is psychotherapy, for example. They don't go to therapy because there's a problem that's so deep that they're impairing their life. They go to therapy because they feel the me getting lost. My me's getting lost. Can you find it, Armand? Right? And a lot of people come to me just for that. I have people who call me and they see me for my consultations that I usually do, especially during the fund drive, and they just, basically they walk in the door and say, where's me? And I point over there and I go, oh, you're over there somewhere. Oh, I didn't see it. And that's the whole essence of our meeting. They need someone who helps them sort themselves out to find the real me. Someone who listens, who really listens. Someone who cares. Someone who isn't going to yell at them. Someone who isn't going to tell them to not be themselves. Someone who could recognize them, acknowledge their real self. Wives go to therapy a lot. Husbands are very often happy. Who wants to listen to all that stuff, the endless problems and complaining, the worries and the fears? They get tired of it fast. You try to smile, you turn a deaf ear. That's what husbands do very often because of the women's need to talk is far greater than the man's need to talk or even to listen, generally we find. So they happily send their wife to therapy, or they send their mate to therapy, so at least she can talk to somebody and get what she needs. You try to smile. After a while, you just work later and later because you just can't take it anymore, because if you're somebody who is needed to talk to just be bombarded with words that have no meaning to you, eventually you just wind up escaping and you work later and later. Another way that people escape the smothering we is they use exercise. Exercise is one of the ways of people escaping the smothering we to preserve the me. It's so acceptable. He's using this me to guarantee the we. His health is giving me a partner who lives longer. It's a good thing. But what happens in that gym? The people who go to the gymnasium and work out the most are the most isolated. Very often you'll find they're not in relationships at all. Very often you'll find they don't even want relationships. They find fault with everybody. Exercise is their life. They are just building their strength and they just stay strong and they're running. It's like they're running from something. What are they running from? They're running from the we. Frequently. Overindulgence in exercise is an attempt to escape the we. It seems to be that the people who are the most exercise conscious, who seem to be really there, you know, three times, sometimes two times a day, right? Those kind of people who go that often usually have very small connections with other people. That's why health clubs are so popular. Not only is it the exercise itself, but it's a chance to be alone, away from your mate, away from your partner, away from the kids. A chance to ogle other scantily clad bodies at the same time. Even have benign flirtations. It's amazing how many men and women take off their wedding rings when they exercise. Because they sweat? What's it all about? How many single men do you think go to health clubs? Many less than married men. It's mostly married. And if it's a man, if a man got a divorce, he would go to the health clubs less often. So, because he's not escaping the dreaded wheeze, that wee that turns into this horrible feeling of, oh, I'm being smothered. The dreadful wee. The one where you're being smothered by a loss of identity, where everything you do on your own is resented. No matter what it is, if you buy a thing for the house, it's resented. Where you're like a person on a leash. The dreadful we. The dreadful we is where the other person invades every part of your being. Sometime, somehow has worked it out so that every moment is accountable. Every second you carry beepers and cell phones. And blackberries and email. They ask you questions like, what are you thinking? You know, what a question to be asked. What are you thinking? Wait a minute. If I'm saying it, that's one thing. But if I'm thinking it, am I allowed to think it? No. What are you thinking? Tell me what you're thinking. What are you feeling? It's like a courtroom where you're accused. Why'd you look at that woman who was passing by? You know, what's on your mind? Get out of that privacy. Wake up, my friends. A phone call between people is one of those things. The dreadful we includes this terrible thing that happens when you're on the phone. If you're in one of the dreadful we's, you're on the phone, your partner listens. And worse than that, they talk to you while you're on the phone, commenting on what they hear you say, whispering about it. Well, tell her the truth about this, right? And then you get upset by something you're saying, and even worse than that, they want you to account for what you heard. They heard you say on the phone, why did you tell her that you're going to buy a brown shirt? Wake up, my friend. A phone call between two people is private. It's a way two individual people talk to each other. If you want to preserve a relationship, find a way to have your phone call in privacy. Imagine what it's like talking to somebody who has a mate listening to every word. I know a man who was so embarrassed by having been had a flirtation that he gave his password to his wife, who now reads every email he gets. And not only does she read his email, she comments on his emails to him. So if he gets an email from a friend saying, hey, you just bought a brown suit, she'll comment, I don't think you look so good in brown, and forward the email to the man who was originally getting it. She's all over the place. Boy, does he hate her. But he wants to preserve the relationship. So he gave her his password. Sure, look at my cell phone. Sure, listen in on my conversations whenever you want. It's an act of aggression. It's a way of really making yourself less we with the person. Imagine what it's like talking to someone who has a mate listening to every conversation. What's it like to carry on conversations with people where you hear the other person snipping in the background? Have you heard that from people? So it's easy to solve this nowadays. There are remote phones. There are cell phones. You walk into another room to have a conversation. That's what sane people do. But there it is. It's a fine balance between me-ism and we-ism and sanity. People, when they get embroiled in relationships, go nuts. They give up their self. So this is one of the keys of a successful relationship. In fact, the most successful relationships I know are the ones where a partner travels. There is a preserved me and a preserved we. Why is this so important? You know, your mate travels out of town and you do your own thing. Well, it all starts very early in life when the child is born. It feels like everything. You know, when you're an infant, I'm going to take you all the way back to where this me, we-ism comes from. When a child is born, it feels like everything is an extension of itself. You who have had children know this. The blanket in the crib is as much a part of him or her as their toes or their fingers. Then the child realizes that there are things outside of its immediate field that are also part of him or her. Mother and child are one to the infant. He cries, the breast appears. Is that his breast or is that her breast? Here, the me includes mother and child, one unit, one being. And whenever you try to separate the child from its unit, it screams. Only if you drug it enough will it let you put it down. That means you have to give it enough milk, right? Feed it enough. Let it fall asleep. Only over time do you learn that you and your mother are separate beings. And if childhood is successful, you realize that separateness is not a bad thing. Here, the me of two people become two different me's. Mom is a me, meaning a separate person, and you're a me. And your mom, who has a life of her own, wants to be me again. She accepted that for the time being, it's me and you, baby. But please grow up so I could go back to being me. But if mom's not happy being me, and mom's too happy being a we with her husband, then she attaches herself to the baby, and the baby never separates. How many men do you know who never left their mothers? How many men do you know who are still attached to the breast? And how many men do you know who just can't leave Mom? Well, Mom did the job. Not maliciously, but Mom had no way out. So she just, you know, clipped the heels. Now, then you add one separate me and another separate me, and you get a we. Now, realizing that we involves two separate me's, you start getting a little scared when you and your mom are now separate. You notice that Mom and Dad are also having a we. And you go, ooh, look, they have a we. And here I am. I'm a me. So I'm with the Mom, I have a me. And when I'm Dad, I have a me, I have a we. And then they have a we. And you notice that there's a world of we's out there. And it's okay. You notice that that you and she are not the only we, and it's okay. And if you have brothers and sisters, you learn you have to wait your turn to get the we of you and Mom, because your brother may have the we of you and Mom for the mother, for the moment, and your sister may. You even develop strategies of getting more we than the other kids, like getting sick. Yeah, you get sick, and now suddenly you have a me with your mother. Some of you do that. You get sick to get attention. Or you excel. You do a good dance. This way they'll pay attention to you. You become a good boy, or a good girl, or a bad boy, or a bad girl, because even if you're bad, you get the attention, the negative attention. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're talking about finding autonomy in relationships, the difference between the me and the we in relationships, and we'll be taking your calls shortly at 212-209-2900. But I have more to tell you about this. For a child, this is a critical period, the adjustment in perception that somehow it's okay for Mom to separate, and how Mom handles this is critical. Sometimes the only we she has, the only place she feels safe, is made up of her and you. Then you're sunk. You see? Now she can't let you go. It's dangerous because she doesn't want the son or daughter to form other we's either. She doesn't want you to, you know, like you start going out with a local girl and she says, oh, that girl, or the local guy. So she starts being critical of other we potential that you might have. So she wants to keep you in the we of her and you. She doesn't mean to, but it's a little comment, a little snippet, a little something, something critical. She engulfs the child. She smothers her or him, and this is the common with single parents especially. They somehow form a we that is based on it's us against the world, and then later wonders why her child can't function. But when you're a single parent, and you've been battered around the single world, and you can't find a mate, and there's a mate sitting right there, your baby, it's so easy to fall right into that. You can see it's very complex, this me and we stuff. It gets all screwed up. That's mostly my business. The business of psychology is all about helping people sort out the mess of what is me and what is we. And it's hard for you to know what the me is. That's where you get a trained eye that helps you sort through it and pull the pieces apart and say, look, this part goes over there, that's your mother. This part goes over there, that's your father. Oh, there's a you. And what do you feel here? That's another you. And that's how we help them sort it out. That's what we do. Mainly, I work at helping people find themselves. But what does that mean? It means trying to unscramble this distorted picture they got of what is me and what is we that they got from childhood. They got confused. And I know a lot of people say all psychology is hogwash because it becomes so obvious. But it is obvious. Your mind becomes possessed. And it's hard to see it, to change it. Think about it. Think about the ideas you had between your mom and you. And think about where you see echoes of that in your relationship today. Think about the way you and your mom were joined and beliefs that you had, and then where did that carry over to where you are today? And let's not leave Daddy out. There's another we that's hard to look at, especially if Dad formed one of those toxic we relationships with his little girl. Oh my gosh almighty. They exclude Mom. How dangerous that could be. Leave out sexual abuse. Leave that whole part out. Just the relationship, you're my little girl, oh, you're my daddy. Just how did that impact, that we, how did it impact on you? You see, that's what happens in relationships. In an attempt to escape the dreadful we, where you feel like you have no me left, the father forms this other we Then he becomes the we of him and his computer, him and his television, him and his exercise clubs, him and his alcohol, him and his daughter, all because he feels, for whatever reason, that the we of him and his wife is too dangerous, too toxic, too engulfing, too smothering. So it would seem, my friends, that all of this, that the only answer is to be sure to maintain the integrity of your personal self. But it's not true. Because the best relationships are both me's and we's. You do not have to stay separate. You just have to keep certain things separate. All of the best relationships, the sharing, the caring, the cooperation, the celebration, the spiritual, the connection, the safety, the warmth, the beauty, the interdependency, the co-creativity, the sleeping flesh connection, the hanging up the Christmas ornaments, the trust, the depth, the longevity, that all comes from we. And if you live your life as two separate me's, you miss most of that. So there's roommates. It's like being roommates. It's like being roommates. The fun is that the we that allows for the me is a delicate balance. And if you carry a lot of emotional baggage from childhood, from the me-we drama that you had with your mother and father, it'll destroy the possibility of finding that beautiful we later, as many of you have had. But you know, the we's always available. It means you got to find out what part of you is still holding on so strongly and so afraid. Loving, real loving, is not easy, my friends. The society is complex. Finding the balance between the me and the we in every relationship is essential. It is really essential. And you're going to call me with this information. When we come back from our break, I'll be taking your calls. I also want to talk to you about why people who are connected wind up having so many arguments. You know, what happens? If you're a we, what are you fighting about? And sometimes, did you ever notice we have a thing in relationships called power struggles? Well, what is a power struggle about? A power struggle is a desperate attempt by one or both partners to maintain a me in a relationship. I, you. Why, when people argue, are they always separating the I and the you, accusing them? And, you know, you did this and you did that and I did this. What happened to the we? It's all accusatory. It's all about separating the I and the you so that you are desperately trying to find out where me is. And that's what happens when couples come in for counseling. When they come in for counseling, they both come in pointing and saying, she's wrong, and he says, no, he's wrong, and they're saying each other are wrong, and they're trying to say, I, and they forget about the we. The very first thing I do with people when they come to see me for counseling as a couple is I remind them of the we. I get them back in touch with it. I say, wait a minute, let's find the we. And any of you who have come to see me know exactly how I do that. I have a trick. And I use this trick so at least it calls on the we of you, so that the people who are in the room discussing this with me are not two individuals who are just killing each other, but a we that's trying to find a way of getting through. Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I'm going to take a short break. When I come back, some special music, and then I'll continue with your phone calls at 212-209-2900.
You gotta give to God.
God knows you got to give to get back. A song by El Perro de Mor. You got to give to get back to the world is what the song is about. One would imagine they're saying you got to give to get back love. No. You see, your existential self, the sense of self that you have in the world and in the universe, it's about giving. It's about participating. It's about the we of the we-ness, this big we. You know, I mean, how big is our we? I'll tell you how I see my we. I see myself as a bubble, a soap suds. One sud, actually. And my experience of myself is most of the time is that I'm a sud in a world of soap suds. So I'm a sud and you're a sud. And Jana, who's sitting with me here today, is a sud. And everything is a sud. And it's like a bunch of soap suds. And the beauty of the world, as I relax into it and allow myself to feel connected, is that when the soap suds grow, as they get bigger like in a bubble bath, and they get bigger and bigger and bigger, and I feel myself expanding with it, and sometimes I could just feel my breath feeding my bubble, and my bubble gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's right pressing up against all the other bubbles around me, but then this thing happens. The bubbles break. And when the bubbles break, and they all break together, it's the most incredible light. It's like a union. It's like the entire universe comes together all at once. I feel inspired. You know, the word inspire means to breathe in. So when you inspire, you know, when you breathe in and you let yourself expand, then you become part of the existential we. Does that mean that you've lost the independent me or the illusion of a me or whatever that is? Well, I don't know, but I do know this. I do know that when somebody is trying to constrict you and hold you down from experiencing your universal me, when they're trying to see you not wanting you to be expansive, that's trouble. It becomes trouble in relationships. You know, there are ways that people terrify each other. They do things. They do things like jealousy is a command to someone that they only become part of your toxic we. Jealousy and things like that, restricting and controlling. Well, some people have no personality. You know, they just figure they grew up and they didn't feel like they had anything at all. So what they did was they gave over the we. They're here, take me. And they look for somebody. Usually a psychopath is a very good thing to be attracted to if you want to give up your personality, because a psychopath who's a person who has no remorse for using you will just use you, chew you up, and spit you out. It's fine. It's fine. You want to be used, I'll use you. You want to have an identity, I'll make you my chewing gum. You know, I'll make you something that's just dispensable. And now, you can't blame the psychopath for doing that because somebody offered him chewing gum. It's like you don't have a personality that you think is worth preserving because you had, when you were younger, a toxic we with your family, which could have been a we that might have been a family that had problems of all kinds. So then you woke up feeling like there was something wrong with you, and you grew up thinking that you're a broken toy. And so you find somebody who values you even as a piece of chewing gum, and you say, ah, there's the me. 212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'd like to take some of your calls and talk to you this week because we're soon coming up to our fund drive. If you'd like to learn about the schedule, when we'll be on air and when we will not be on air, you could always go to my website, thepositivemind.com. We have some days we're going to be on, some days we're going to be off, and specials that we're bringing you. Some very interesting stuff. That'll be coming up in May as we raise money for WBAI and keep this glorious station on the air because, boy, it is a we. 212-209-2900. Let me take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air. Hello there.
Armand?
Yes.
Hi. Thank you for your show. This is very appropriate for me. Today is a two-year anniversary for me and the man that I'm in love with. We're driving each other crazy. We love hard, and we play even harder. We fight hard.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting thing, love, play, and fight hard.
Yeah.
So now is your second anniversary, and in your worst fights, in your worst battles, what do you fight over?
Jealousy. I would say jealousy is the first thing.
Right, because you think that he spends a little too much time attracted to other women?
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And in fact, you've caught him doing things?
No, I think it's me and my imagination. And by the way, he might be listening.
Good. Maybe he'll call in, too. So in this impact, now I'm going to tell you something I've realized about the most tumultuous relationships, when there's the most fights, anger, and sometimes even violence between people.
Right.
People seem to fight the hardest, or they have the biggest fight when they feel that they could be the most swallowed up. So here's where I'm going to go as a speculation. I want to talk about lovemaking for a moment, if you don't mind, mind being that person.
Not at all.
Tell me about what it's like to have an intimate relationship with this guy you're in love with.
What's it like for me?
Yeah, compared to everything you've had before.
It's amazing. It's orgasmic. It's 150% that I've never had before.
So in that thing of yours, what's your name?
Rose.
In that thing, Rose, when you get, when you have this incredible experience, do you feel at one point that you are lost like you've never been before? You join, you're connected, it's flesh to flesh, it's rhythm, it's all of that, it's fire.
All that and then some, yes.
Fire, and it includes, it could be anything. It's not just gentle sex. It could be almost near violent sex.
It's anything and everything.
Anything and everything.
Yeah.
So something happens during the sensual experience where the two of you find a level that you go to where you both dissolve into a mushy, orgasmic we.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that true?
Yes.
Now, once that happens, there's a sensor inside you. It goes off and it says, uh-oh, we're lost. Where are we? Where's Rose? Where's Rose? And he's got one, too. You know, what's his name, Al?
His name, Butch.
Butch.
Yes.
Where's Butch? Okay. and Butch is saying, this is terrific. I think I'll go get a sandwich. I think I'll go get a pizza. I think I'll go watch TV or I'll go to sleep. Does Butch fall asleep, by the way?
He does, yes.
That's what I would imagine. So now, here you are, united with Butch in this tremendously intense, orgasmic, loving, panting, breathing experience, in my imagination, if that's the way it is.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, then he kind of goes off to sleep, and you're left there now. Now, this is not a very bad thing, because you're left there filled with all kinds of wonderful love and chemicals, and you feel good, you know? But you feel good, but you're kind of lost. Now, the two of you have to kind of find yourselves again.
We do cuddle, though.
Yep. And you hold each other, and you get lost overnight in each other's arms. It's a really beautiful thing. But then this thing happens. The inside sensor says, you must maintain your identity. Because if you don't, you're going to get so lost, you're going to lose your perception. And here's the trouble with Butch. Butch is not trustworthy. Butch knows he's not trustworthy. Mm-hmm. You know he's not trustworthy.
Mm-mm.
Butch, did Butch have another girlfriend when he met you?
We both aren't trustworthy.
Yeah, well, all right. So
failed marriages.
What?
We had failed marriages.
Or whatever that means. It might have been successful marriages because you got out. But
mm-hmm.
when you met Butch, was he still with his wife?
No, not at all.
Was he with anybody else?
No.
So when he met you, were you with anybody else?
No.
So then the two of you had this kind of equal playing field, and the mm-hmm. two of you get together, But Butch has problems, you know. He's going to be, he doesn't know how to get through life. You don't know how to get through life. You're trying it out. And the individual inside of you says, don't get too lost. See, I don't know when people really begin to trust each other, really. Sometimes it's a pathological trust that starts at the very beginning, where you meet somebody for the first time and you just say, oh, I trust you, you're so wonderful, here's my wallet. Oh, you want my social security number? Yeah, and my CVC code or whatever that thing is. Sure, I'll give you whatever you want. I love you. Look, how could I not love you? Look how much sex we had. Mm-hmm. Right? That's one. But then there's this other one that kicks in. That's one level of trust. Then something takes place between the couple where there's a deception, a fraud, a betrayal. Now, this could be anything from losing a job, a secret thing, you know, an addiction on the side, anything like it. And it's discovered. And you have a choice at that point to either break up because you were betrayed, mm-hmm. or work through it. Now, when you work through a betrayal, you form a level of relationship that's not as trusting as the orgasmic trusting, but it's a deeper trusting. It's a realization that the two of you are two entities, and you're separate. And yes, he may betray you again. And that doesn't matter. You're going to work it through. And eventually, over years, the advantage of many years of being together is no matter what the betrayals, you know you can get through them. And the betrayals may not be betrayals, but it could be any number of problems. And then that becomes the real relationship. The we is based on a basic distrust with a basic trust combined. That takes time. 2 years, you're on your road. 2 years is a long time, and it sounds like you and Butch are having a wonderful time. And it looks like your arguing is saying that we're getting a little lost in each other and a little ahead of ourselves. Mm-hmm. So it may be worth talking to somebody about it.
Okay.
Was any of this helpful, Rose?
Yes, it was. Thank you so much.
Okay, my best to Butch.
Thank you.
Respects.
Happy anniversary, Butchie. Love you.
Hey, Butch, happy anniversary to you.
Thank you.
And to Rose.
All right, bye.
Butchie, I like that. 212-209-2900. It's so tough. But it's also so wonderful. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Who is this?
Oh, my name is...
My name is...
Yeah,
my name is...
Really prefer, I prefer not to say my name, but just D.
Sure.
Okay. Great subject. Really good subject. And it really touched home for me. Because I always feel like I'm fighting to get me... I feel like it's a constant battle to try to get a piece of me.
In what kind of a relationship?
Well, I've been married. It's going on 16 years. I feel like he's trying to control the whole thing. Because, he can call me 2-3 times a day and talk about nothing. But if I'm in the middle of working, it feels like I have to drop what I'm doing to answer his calls. I could be watching television and laughing about something funny in another room, and he'll call me and say, well, what are you laughing at? And to me, I get upset with that because it shouldn't matter what I'm laughing at. It just should be just...
How long have you been with him? How long have you been with this?
Well, we've been married almost 16 years, but before that, 4 years.
Okay, so 20 years of being together.
Yes.
And your husband is saying... I'm lonely. He's saying, I don't feel too good by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what to do with myself. And so I attach myself to you as my lifeline. And I need you. And your husband is saying, I feel frail and I feel lonely. And a man of 20 years that you've been with,
mm-hmm.
why aren't we saying to him, why aren't you talking to him? And instead of criticizing him, saying, you know, there's something about you that you seem to be unhappy with, and you seem to be unhappy with yourself. And I love you, darling, and I want you to be happier. So I want you to help you explore this, but I can't do it with you. Maybe we'll have to find someone else to help you. But there's a basic unhappiness that sits inside you, which is why you're so desperate. And I don't even want to use the word desperate because I don't want to alienate him.
Okay.
I feel the desperation in you. And as a friend, wouldn't you take him and say, let's take a closer look at what's going on. Because maybe he can't talk to you about it, and the best he could do is just call you up and ask you what you're laughing at. But he sounds like a very lonely man.
Well, we don't really know how to communicate to each other.
Where you get some help.
Okay.
You get some help. Get a counselor who's going to help you, the two of you talk. There are so many of the good ones around. Mm-hmm. You know, they charge very little money, and they just, you know, help you sort out your communication. And just, it adds a richness to life, you know. It makes life just like a little richer. It just makes, it turns it around. And if you've been together 20 years, it's terrific to throw a new spark on it, you know.
Okay.
Like a new log.
Right.
Thanks for calling in, see.
All right, thank you.
212-209-2900. This is Armand DeMille taking your calls. Take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Yes. Good afternoon, Armand.
Hi there.
I'm in a long-time listener.
Great.
And I have a question about relationships in general. I have a problem connecting. Now, I was listening to your explanation of the me and the we, and I'm divorced. And when I was married to my ex-wife, yes, towards the end, I had a definite problem finding the me in a relationship. But that's, you know, 10 years down the road. That's 10 years ago. But now currently I'm on a dating scene, and I find a real problem connecting. And I can't figure out why that is.
Connecting how? What do you mean? Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking for that one great love. I mean, I guess what everyone else is looking for, I'm looking for the same thing, too. I'm sort of, you know, really optimistic and really charged up, and, you know, I don't feel I'm particularly closed about my emotions or who I am, and I feel I'm very open. And I just seem to have a really strange connection.
All right, let me ask you a question. Let me ask you, what's your hobby?
You see motorcycle riding and automobile racing.
That's what you like.
Well, that's what it used to be. I really don't do it anymore.
And what do you do now?
I work. I come home.
When you were a kid, where did you grow up?
In New York.
What part of New York?
Queens.
In Queens, when things were rough when you were a kid, did you run out of the house?
No, I actually used to play with Legos. That was my big thing.
That's what I wanted to find out. What about you and Legos? Tell me. You build them into animals and people and things?
Well, you know, it...
You created a world?
I was the youngest of three. Yeah, incredible imagination.
Right, so this is kind of what happened to you. And what happened to you was you are somebody who's a very private type of person. And in your privacy as a child, the way you hid from the drama that was taking place around you as a child, and I'm going to tell you, your family was a wreck. You know, I mean...
I never thought they were that bad, actually.
I'm sure you didn't, but I can tell you that you had to hide yourself because you connected with Legos, which is a way that people connect with, like, toys and soldiers when they can't connect with people. So it was showing back then, you know, it was showing the sign. Then later than that, you showed this escapist part of you, motorcycles and cars. You're running, you know. And now here it comes to where you want to connect with somebody. And what you're doing is you're setting up a criteria. The criteria is she must be the one great love. And you know what I suggest to you? What's your name, by the way?
Al.
The thing I suggest is go back to my bubble fantasy. Go back to being a bubble so that when you are in the world, you are not looking for the perfect mate, but look for anybody who could be a friend. And let yourself grow to know people on a less stringent, less strong requirement. Connect with people. Don't connect with love. As you connect with people first and you feel yourself making that connection, the love will come along. But if you search for the love, it's not going to happen.
Wow. Because there's a young lady that it's like on again, off again sort of a relationship. But it's my doing when it's off again. I mean, she's really in my corner, and she's really a phenomenal person. We have great sex together. I mean, we're really compatible in a lot of different ways. But it's funny, you know, you mentioned that bubble thing. It's you're right. I have all these criteria, and I'm trying to make her fit within these criteria, and it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, because the trouble with shaping somebody is they become you.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then you lose the me and the we. Then it's just like, you know, you're playing with yourself. It's like you have your own relationship with yourself. I know so many men who, you know, spend their entire lives finding themselves their own sexual satisfaction. Then they meet a mate and they turn the mate into exactly what their sexual fantasy is. But it's like they're back to being with themselves. So what you want to do, Al, is you want to expand. And I would say focus on the friendship first. Focus on the friendship. The sex may be great, the love may be great, and you know what friends do with each other? The one thing that friends do with each other that lovers don't do?
They love each other unconditionally.
They just say, whatever you are.
Right.
Whatever you are. Whoever you are, that's what I want you to be. That's what friends do. Right. I love you unconditionally. I mean, I may not like everything that you are, but please be who you are. Hey, thanks for calling in. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. And how's this for the me and the we? I'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m. with a special guest. We're going to be talking about quantum physics and personal relationships. My special thanks to all of you out there. And hey, we'll see. ThePositiveMind.com is the website. Or you could go to WBAI.org to hear a rebroadcast of these very, very programs. Back with you tomorrow at 1, my friends.
WBAI New York at 99.5 FM and WBAI.org. Coming up at 2 p.m. will be the Arts Magazine Talkback with Hugh Hamilton at 3 o'clock.